Chapter 10. There's a dreadful form of torture in the Hushlands, devised by the librarians. Though this is supposed to be a book for all ages, I feel that it's time to confront this disturbing and cruel practice. Somebody has to be brave enough to shine a light on it. That's right. It's time to talk about after-school specials. After-school specials are a type of television programming that the librarians put on right when children get home from school. The specials are usually about some kid who is struggling with a nonsensical problem like bullying, peer pressure, or gerbil snorting. We see the kid's life, his struggles, his problems, and then the show provides a nice, simple solution to tie everything up by the end. The point of these programs, of course, is to be so blatantly awful and painful to watch that the children wish they were back in school. That way, when they have to get up the next morning and do long division, they'll think, well, at least I'm not at home watching that terrible after-school special. I include this explanation here for all of you in the Free Kingdoms so that you'll understand what I'm about to say. It's very important for you to understand that I don't want this book to sound like an after-school special. I let my fame go to my head. The point of this book isn't to show how that's bad, it's to show the truth about me as a person, to show what I'm capable of. That first day in Nalhalla, I think, says a lot about who I am. I don't even like Huber Stackers. Deep within the innards of Keep Smedry, we approached a room with 6 guards standing out front. They saluted Grandpa Smedry. He responded by wiggling his fingers at them. He's like that sometimes. Inside, we discovered a group of people in black robes who were polishing a large metal box. "That's quite the box," I said.
"Isn't it, though?"
Grandpa Smedry said, smiling. "Shouldn't we be summoning a dragon or something to take us to Crystallia?"
"This will be faster,"
Grandpa Smedry said, waving over one of the people in robes. Black robes are the Free Kingdom's equivalent of a white lab coat. Black makes way more sense. This way, when the scientists blow themselves up, at least the robes have a chance of being salvageable.
"Lord Smedry," the woman said, "we've applied for a swap time with Crystallia. Everything will be ready for you in about 5 minutes."
"Excellent, excellent," Grandpa Smedry said.
Then his face fell.
"What?"
I asked, alarmed.
"Well, it's just that we're early. I'm not sure what to think about that. You must be having a bad influence on me, my boy."
"Sorry," I said. It was hard to contain my anxiety. Why hadn't I thought of going to help Bastille? Would I arrive in time to make a difference? If a train left Nalhalla traveling at 3.14 miles an hour and a train left Bermuda at 45 megahertz, what time does the soup have pancakes?
"Grandfather," I said as we waited, "I saw my mother today."
"Folsom mentioned that. You showed great initiative in following her."
"She's got to be up to something."
"Of course she is, lad. Problem is, what?"
"You think it might be related to the treaty?"
Grandpa Smedry shook his head.
"Maybe. Shasta's a tricky one. I don't see her working with the Wardens of the Standard on one of their projects unless it were helping her own goals, whatever those are."
That seemed to trouble him. I turned back to the robed men and women. They were focused on large chunks of glass that were affixed to the corners of the metal box.
"What is that thing?" I asked.
"Hmm? Oh! Transporter's glass, lad. Or, well, that's transporter's glass at the corners of the box. When the right time arrives, the one we've scheduled with the engineers at a similar box up in Crystallia, both groups will shine bright sand on those bits of glass. Then the box will be swapped with the one over in Crystallia."
"Swapped?" I said.
"You mean we'll get teleported there?"
"Indeed. Fascinating technology. Your father helped develop it, you know."
"He did?"
"Well, he was the first to discover what the sand did," Grandpa Smedry said. "We'd known that the sand had oculatory distortions. We didn't know what it did.
Your father spent a number of years researching it and discovered that this new sand could teleport things, but it only worked if two sets of transporter's glass were exposed to bright sand at the same time, and if they were transporting two items that were exactly the same size.
Bright sand.
It was the fuel of Silomatic technology. When you expose other sands to bright sand's glowing light, they do interesting things. Some, for instance, start to float. Others grow very heavy. I could see enormous canisters in the corners of the room, likely filled with bright sand. The sides of the containers could be pulled back, letting the light shine on the transporter's glass.
So, I said, you had to send ahead to Crystallia and tell them what time we were coming so that they could activate their transporter's glass at the same time.
Precisely.
What if someone else activated their bright sand at exactly the same time that we do? Could we get teleported there by accident?
I suppose, Grandpa Smedri said, but they'd have to be sending a box exactly the same size as this one. Don't worry, lad. It would be virtually impossible for that kind of error to happen.
Virtually impossible.
The moment you read that, you probably assumed that the error would, of course, happen by the end of this book. You assume this because you've read far too many novels. You make it very difficult for us writers to spring proper surprises on you because...
Look over there!
See? Didn't work, did it?
All right, one of the black-robed people said. Step into the box and we'll begin. Still a little worried about a disaster that was... virtually impossible, I followed Grandpa Smedri into the box. It felt a little like stepping into a large elevator. The doors shut, then immediately opened again.
"Is something wrong?" I asked.
"Wrong?" Grandpa Smedri said. "Why, if something had gone wrong, we'd have been shredded to little pieces and turned into piles of sludge."
"What?"
"Oh, did I forget to mention that part?" Grandpa Smedri said. "Like I said, virtually impossible. Come on, my boy, we have to keep moving. We're late."
He scuttled out of the box, and I followed more cautiously. We had indeed been teleported somewhere else. It had been so quick I hadn't even felt the change. This new room we entered was made completely of glass. In fact, the entire building around me seemed to be made of glass. I remembered the enormous glass mushroom I'd seen when flying into the city, with a crystalline castle built atop of it. It was a safe bet I was in Crystallia. Of course, there was also a pair of knights holding massive swords made entirely from crystal standing at the doorway. They were kind of a clue, too. The knights nodded to Grandpa Smedri, and he bustled out of the room, and I followed hastily.
"We're really there?" I asked.
"Atop the mushroom?"
"Yes, indeed," Grandpa Smedri said. "It's a rare privilege to be allowed into these halls. Crystallia is forbidden to outsiders."
"Really?" Grandpa Smedri nodded.
"Like Smedrius, Crystallia used to be a sovereign kingdom. During the early days of Nalhalla, Crystallia's queen married their king and swore her knights as protectors of their noble line. It's actually a rather romantic and dramatic story, one I would eagerly tell you, except for the fact that I recently forgot it based on its being far too long and having not enough decapitations."
"A just reason for forgetting any story."
"I know," Grandpa Smedri said. "Anyway, the treaty that merged Nalhalla and Crystallia stipulated that the land atop the mushroom become home to the knights and is off limits to common citizens. The Order of Knights also retained the right to discipline and train its members, once recruited, without interference from the outside."
"But aren't we here to interfere?"
"Of course we are," Grandpa Smedri said, raising a hand. "That's the Smedri way. We interfere with all kinds of stuff. But we're also Nalhalla nobility, which the knights are sworn to protect, and, most important, not kill for trespassing."
"That's not a very comforting rationale for why we might be safe here."
"Don't worry," Grandpa Smedri said happily. "I've tested this. Just enjoy the view."
It was tough,
Not that the view wasn't spectacular. We were walking down a hallway constructed entirely from glass blocks. It was late afternoon outside, and the translucent walls refracted the light of the sun, making the floor sparkle. I could see shadows of people moving through distant hallways, distorting the light further. It was as if the castle were alive, and I could see the pulsing of its organs within the walls around me. It was quite breathtaking. However, I was still dealing with the fact that I'd betrayed Bastille, that I'd just risked being turned into a pile of goo, and that the only thing keeping me from being cut apart by a bunch of territorial knights was my last name. Beyond that, there was the sound. It was a quiet ringing, like a crystal vibrating in the distance. It was soft, but it was also one of those things that was very hard to unnotice once you spotted it. Grandpa Smedri obviously knew his way around Crystallia, and soon we arrived at a chamber being guarded by two knights. The crystal doors were closed, but I could vaguely make out the shapes of people on the other side. Grandpa Smedri walked over to open the door, but one of the knights raised his hand.
"You are too late, Lord Smedri," the man said. "The judgment has begun."
"What?" Grandpa Smedri declared. "I was told it wouldn't happen for an hour yet."
"It is happening now," the knight said.
As much as I like the knights, they can be, well, blunt. And stubborn. And really bad at taking jokes. Which is why I feel I need to mention page 40 again, just to annoy them.
"Surely you can let us in," Grandpa Smedri said. "We're important witnesses in the case."
"Sorry," the knight said.
"We are also close personal friends of the knight involved."
"Sorry."
"We also have very good teeth," Grandpa Smedri said, then smiled.
This seemed to confuse the knight. Grandpa Smedri has that effect on people. However, once again, the knight simply shook his head and said,
"Sorry."
Grandpa Smedri stepped back, annoyed, and I felt a twist of despair. I'd failed to help Bastille after all she'd gone through for me. She should have known that she shouldn't rely on me.
"How are you feeling, lad?"
Grandpa Smedri asked. I shrugged.
"Annoyed?"
he prompted.
"Yeah."
"Frustrated?"
"A bit."
"Bitter?"
"You're not helping."
"I know I'm not." "Angry?"
I didn't answer. The truth was, I did feel angry. At myself, mostly, for partying with Rodreo and his friends while Bastille was in trouble. For forgetting about Mokia and its problems. For letting my grandfather down. It hadn't been that long ago that I'd always assumed that I'd let everyone down. I'd pushed people away before they could abandon me. But working with Grandpa Smedri and the others had made me begin to feel that I could lead a normal life. Maybe I didn't have to alienate everyone. Maybe I was capable of having friendships, of having family, of... There was a slight cracking sound.
"Oops," Grandpa Smedri said in a loud voice. "Looks like you've gone and upset the boy."
I started, looking down, realizing that I'd let my talent crack the glass beneath my feet. Twin spiderwebs of lines crept from my shoes, marring the otherwise perfect crystal. I blushed, embarrassed. The knights had grown pale.
"Impossible," one said. "This crystal is supposed to be unbreakable," the other said.
"My grandson," Grandpa Smedri said proudly. "He has the breaking talent, you know. Upset him too much, and the entire floor could shatter. Actually, the entire castle could..."
"Get him out, then,"
one of the knights said, shooing me away like one might treat an unwanted puppy.
"What?"
Grandpa Smedri said.
"Antagonize him by throwing him out, and you could destroy the castle itself. We'll just have to see if he calms down. His talent can be very unpredictable when he's emotional."
I could see what Grandpa Smedri was doing. I hesitated, then focused my power, trying to further crack the glass at my feet. It was an extremely foolhardy thing to do. That's what made it exactly the sort of plan Grandpa Smedri would come up with. The spiderwebs at my feet grew larger. I steadied myself by touching the wall, and immediately created a ring of cracks around my hand. "Wait!" one of the knights exclaimed. "I'll go in and ask if you can enter." Grandpa Smedri beamed. "What a nice fellow," he said, taking my arm, stopping me from breaking more. The knight opened the door, stepping inside. "Did we really just blackmail a knight of Crystallia?" I asked under my breath.
"Two of them, I believe," Grandpa Smedri said. "And it was really more intimidation than it was blackmail. Maybe with a twist of extortion. It's always best to use the proper terminology."
The knight returned, then, with a sigh, gestured for us to enter the chamber. We walked in eagerly. And then Grandpa Smedri exploded.